This is Left Out on WRCT 88.3 FM. We're talking about a number of issues here, and your calls are welcome. But I think, do we have a call? I think, no, we don't have a call. Okay, so your calls are welcome at 412-621-9728 or 89728 on campus. Well, Bob uncovered another story recently from one of his favorite alternative
favorite
writers. Yeah, Karen Katowski.
Karen Katowski.
Who was on our program 6 months ago or so.
Regular listeners of Left Out will recall that Karen Katowski was a guest on Left Out back in, I think it was January or February. And I think I'll interrupt. We have a caller here, so why don't we jump in. Caller, go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Paul.
Hi.
You may know about this group, Scientists and Engineers for Change. Have you heard of them?
No, I don't. Why don't you explain that for us?
Well, I just learned of it today. There was a New York Times story about this group. It's various Nobel Prize winners and other well-known scientists and engineers that have joined together and are endorsing Kerry and are giving speeches around the country. In various battleground states, and I was able to find their website at scientistsandengineersforchange.org.
I see.
And it shows that there's going to be a talk at Carnegie Mellon, which is very nice, on October 26. Maxine Singer and Harold Varmus. One of them, Varmus, is a Nobel Prize winner in cancer research, and Maxine Singer apparently is president of the Carnegie Institution and has worked on science policy. But they'll be speaking at CMU on October 26, according to this webpage, presumably about the election and science and engineering issues affected by the Bush policies.
Oh, okay.
So that might be of interest to listeners.
Right. So we have two more programs before the election. Yeah, that's important. Although, you know, one of the things is that it's just frustrating to think about how hard it is for these views to get into the mainstream media. But I guess that's one of the stories we keep hammering on all the time. Maybe they'll come to CMU and they'll be talking to, well, won't they be talking to a...
Scientists and engineers.
Yeah, they'll be talking to an audience of the converted, and the newspapers will quote it and say, well, these scientists say one thing, but there's this one other scientist who doesn't agree with them.
Right.
So we have to balance the reporting, even though it's 2,000 Nobel Prize winners on one side and one bozo on the other side. Oh, we've got to balance the reporting at both sides.
Right, and some scientists think the world is flat, right?
Right. Or there's no such thing as global warming, and there was a guy like that at MIT for a whole decade, basically held up that story from getting out, because the mainstream media had to always include, you know, the other side and allow people to act like it was still controversial.
Well, as we've previously discussed and left out, the Union of Concerned Scientists has also been very active on this in dealing with the abuse of science by the Bush administration. So I think all good information. Thanks for pointing out that that they're coming to speak. You said it was October
26th
at Carnegie Mellon campus. So that'll be shortly before the election. We'll put that in the Left Out webpage to remind our listeners next time around.
Okay.
Did you go to see John Edwards this morning?
Yes. I thought he was great. Very, approachable, and, he wasn't like a screamer, or he was not angry. He was
not a stiff.
And I was very impressed that they were taking spontaneous questions. You know, they weren't, submitted and screened. He was just, people were raising their hands, and he was just picking people out of the crowd.
Yeah, that's right, including one fellow who was, I think, a bit out to lunch.
Yes.
He seemed to think that the right thing was to keep Saddam Hussein in power or something.
Right.
Well, was there...
So it just showed you, though, people who were there were not required to sign an oath of loyalty. They were not pre-screened and, set off into a free speech zone if they had, wacky ideas. And they
were
asked
there
questions,
hostile,
and they got
questions?
And they got answers.
Were Bush supporters or what?
The one fellow was, I would say, was a bit abnormal in his points of view.
Yeah, nobody.
He wouldn't be a Bush supporter. He wouldn't be anything. He was some kook, basically.
Nobody was strongly hostile.
Right. So, but certainly nobody. You know, everyone just walked in without any requirement, as I say, to sign any oaths of loyalty or to confine ourselves to a designated free speech zone, because this is a designated free speech zone.
Yeah.
And so I think I was delighted about that. Well, good. Well, thank you very much for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, bye.
Bye.
So returning to our previous discussion, there's an article that you may wish to look at written by a fellow named, if I can find it, Al Lawrence, which is the article is linked on leftout.info, but it appeared on lewrackwell.com, called Why We Cannot Win, and I will add to that, in Iraq. So Al Lawrence is a reservist, an NCO, non-commissioned officer, so I presume a sergeant or something of that level, who has worked working in Iraq at the moment. He's been in the military for 20 years, and he's written an essay about why we cannot win, and the reasons are, I think, things that many of us here on Left Out have discussed before and that we've commented on before. I'll read off a few of his points very briefly, but I encourage you to look at the complete essay, and then I have some comment also about what's going on with it. So one is, first, we refuse to deal in reality. So I think that is completely true. If there's one thing that sums up the Bush administration's treatment of the war in Iraq, is it's living in fantasy land and just say that down is up.
Yeah.
And white is black, and whatever we say is the truth, regardless of the facts. So that's one fact. And where have we heard this before? Where we went wrong? In Vietnam. What was the major problem in Vietnam? We refused to deal with reality. We instead dealt with some fantasy world of us riding in off over the horizon to rescue people from the commies, and the whole story.
Well, the Vietnam syndrome means we saw reality. Now we're getting over the Vietnam syndrome and going back to being unable to see reality. Yeah.
Good. And then he says, second, and again, this is applies also to Vietnam, our assessment of what motivates the average Iraqi was skewed, again, by politically motivated experts. And so he said, we came here with some fantasy idea that the natives were all ignorant, mud hut-dwelling camel riders who would line the streets and pelt us with rose petals, lay palm fronds in the street, and be eternally grateful. And while at one time there may actually have been support and respect from the locals, months of occupation by our regular military forces have turned the formerly friendly into the recently hostile. So that's one comment. Third is, guerrillas are filling their losses faster than we can create them. Fourth, their lines of supply and communication are much shorter than ours and much less vulnerable. Fifth, we consistently underestimate the enemy and his capabilities. Our tactics are not adjusted to the battlefield, and we are falling behind. So these are some comments from someone who's there. Again, as with all such political commentary, you can decide what you think about it and whether you think this person knows what he's talking about. One thing I can say is he has been there, he is there, and W never was. But in any case, so what is the reaction of the Bush administration to this? Well, they are seeking to prosecute him on the charging him with violation of Article 134, I think, of the UCMJ, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, for making a statement with the intent to promote disloyalty or disaffection toward the U.S. by any member of the armed forces. So you got that? So by claiming that our Iraq policy is a failure, that we are doomed to lose, and that our policies bear no relation to reality, that is deemed as promoting disloyalty or disaffection toward the U.S., and he may be prosecuted for this. So I encourage you to look into this. I mean, this is the true face of the Bush administration. This is the true face of this of the occupation of Iraq. And I encourage you to our listeners to read the article, and also Karen Katowski's comments on it, which also appear on lewrockwell.com and are linked to on our webpage. Well, we're running short of time. We only have about 4 or 5 minutes left. If you wish, we can call in. We certainly have time for another caller. You can call in at 412-621-9728 or 89728 on campus to talk about any subject we've been discussing on Left Out today or any other time. So,
what else is on the...
our last topic for today, I think this is all we'll have time for, is a website I've recently come across that may be of interest to some of our listeners. It's called the Conceptual Guerrilla comments, Conceptual Guerrilla Strategy and Tactics. So this is an interesting fellow. I would describe him in the Left Out program notes as being Thomas Frank on steroids. He's a bit of a character, very funny, has lots to say, and his
what's his name?
I don't know his name. He doesn't disclose his name. He says when he describes himself as having been a lawyer for something like he got tired of the day-to-day law practice about 6 years ago after doing it for about 10 years, and he's now working on helping people to fight the right. And so he's a very good debater. He's very good at, I imagine he was a trial lawyer. I imagine that he was quite adept in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. And arguing his case, if you read his articles, you'll see what I mean. And his main purpose here is to help people know how to make arguments against the right. And so it's interesting from that point of view. It's not merely a rant, about his own opinions, although it is about his own opinions. But it's really as the subtitle of the webpage says, strategy and tactics. And the one that reminds me very much of Thomas Frank, who was a guest on Left Out a few weeks ago, is characterizing the policies of the right as advocating what he calls cheap labor conservatism. And that's a nice phrase, which sort of is the counterpart to, you know, big government liberals. How about cheap labor conservatism? Well, we're nearly out of time. We have about 30 seconds left, so we'll have to pick up that topic another time. Thanks again to Dan O'Neill and to Molly for producing our program today. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and next week we will have Rust Belt Radio, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. See you then. Thanks for listening.